All right, everyone, welcome to the Venture Capital Podcast. We are here with Al Doan, longtime friend.
Hello, listener. Hello.
For those of you that don't know, he owns the Disneyland of quilting.
Not Peter, that's me.
That's you. Everyone knows Peter. Peter's on every episode.
Oh, that makes more sense. Well, hello, listener. I'm the quilting mogul. It's me. I'm glad to be here.
Missouri Star Quilt Co. Every time one of your magazines comes or an email comes, my mom will be like, do you know Al Doan? He's so cool. I think she wishes I was you.
And I love that she keeps forgetting every month and she has to ask you again if you know me.
No, she knows. She knows.
Yeah.
She loves you. She loves your mom.
It's my favorite thing. I've literally been in like investor parties and stuff, and you know, you kind of drift. It's an unfortunate product of circumstance that it exists this way, but the wives all hang out together in their own space because the guys in their suits all hang out in their own space. So I'll go drift into the wives, and dude, they all know what I'm doing, and it's great, and I love them, and we just hang out and talk quilting, and then I got to go back to the husbands that like are all excited about the next TikTok happening or whatever, and okay. They have no idea who I am, but their wives, man, the wives and moms, they get it. They're into it.
You know, one of the cool things about your space is, unlike like a SaaS founders on my side, we never drive around and see our logo on anything. But my guess is you probably repeatedly see your logo on bands and whatnot.
I built a town around my company, so I have my logo everywhere, but it's of my own doing.
Let's say you're in Florida, right? My guess is someplace outside of town. You've never seen your logo outside of town.
No, I have. So I've been on a tour in Montana at Glacier National Park, and some lady will jump out with a Missouri Stars hoodie on or something. And where were we? I was down in like San Diego and had my Missouri Star hoodie on, and somebody like screamed and got their camera and wanted to take a picture with me. Like, The brand has some reach, but no, we're not putting our logo on too much stuff outside of Hamilton, excepting like merch. But man, people love it. People love, they have a great relationship with the brand. I'm really, actually, one of the things I'm most proud of is that like we're a brand that most people don't hate. They like being associated with it. They like what we stand for. They like the feelings that we give them, which means we're doing something right. So no, it's a good time, man.
Any customers have tattoos?
I don't know if we have a Missouri Star tattoo. I would not get one because, well, like, why would you? But no, what if they did? I would be nervous to ask for a picture because I don't know where they'd put it.
It's my favorite vanity metric when I meet with consumer startups is the ones that put how many customers that have tattoos of their brand.
that seems self-indulgent, but
who was the most that you come across?
We looked at this electric bike company, Super 76, and I think they had the most.
No, their logo is a lightning bolt. It's just a generic symbol that they're counting. That's not really them.
Well, so what they had was, it was the frame of their bike, and they actually hired a tattoo artist and threw several big events, and you could get a free tattoo of their bike. And so they had like a people with the
what
that
a tattoo. Cocky! I mean, that's like handing out you're handing out Kleenex at the funeral before they start to cry. You're just like, here, I'm so confident that we are great. I want to tattoo my mark on your body and just expect people to do that. Like hiring a tattoo artist to be at your Dove startup event. And the fact that it worked really pisses me off. I hate that people actually got that tattoo. I wish nobody got that tattoo after he did that.
Although my favorite story is the Liquid Death story. Have you heard this story of the CEO?
Go on.
So there's this guy, the number one fan. He's never met him. But the number one fan is this guy on TikTok who all he does is pound a Liquid Death every day and film himself doing it. That's it. And so the CEO was like, you know, everybody gets tattoos. The customers get tattoos of brand, but I'm going to get a tattoo of our customer. And so he has a tattoo of this guy's face on his arm. He's never even met the guy, but he, you know.
I bet you Bezos doesn't have an Amazon logo tattooed on his inner thigh. You know, like people that real people doing their companies. You gotta have a chapter of life, and you gotta be free to let it live and then die, and not have a permanent mark on your body of a customer on TikTok because you were so excited for what that was gonna do for you. I disagree with this man's life choices. I say bad form.
I disagree with inner thigh placements anywhere else.
That just sounds horribly painful.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I would think so.
So I do love the passion for the brand. But you know. Especially I mean, let's be honest, Liquid Death, they just raised at north of $1 billion and it is literally
great canned water. It is great canned water.
It's just water in a can.
Yeah.
In a tall boy.
Overpriced water in a can.
Overpriced water in a can with amazing marketing.
Yeah. It's really nice time. And that guy's making a ton of money. So good for them and good for water. We need more water drinkers out there. So he's doing the Lord's work, but
that's
still
right. Water cool.
You should be able to go home at 5 o'clock and not have tattoos on your body of your company. I just feel like that should be the bar.
Maybe it's a fake tattoo, like what the Paul brothers did.
Then maybe.
It's henna. It's all henna.
It's all henna.
All a marketing scam. Well, Rolling Fund. Tell us about the Rolling Fund. So each year you raise $2.5 million for your fund?
No, I wish. No, we're about a million-ish annually. So we're a bunch of 50K checks into companies. And the intent was we wanted to be early, confident checks and people doing really cool stuff. Kind of a product of like me going through my own fundraising ordeal. Because like I'm a successful businessman. I've done great things. I built a $100 million company. And then I stepped back from that and I was like, I'm going to go and start a cool little software company. And I'm going to raise, I need like $2 or $3 million and I can do this. It's a great idea. I know what I'm doing. I can clearly build a team. I know how to manage a company. I know how to scale it. I've done all this. And I went to fundraise and it was brutal. And it was honestly, man, I had the thought, I don't know. Like I was glad that I didn't have any other strikes against me, because I would have blamed it on that, right? Not strikes, but you know, like you'll run in some circles where like I feel like if I was a female out there trying to fundraise, I could easily have blamed the fact that I was female for how hard it was. But I had nothing. I was a white guy, male in the tech field trying to do this, and it was so freaking hard. And I just had to own the fact that it was like, it was so sucky to try and do this. And I can't imagine how much harder it is for people that feel like they're not as well represented in these funding circles. But it was just me out there thinking I had it all solved and I could not put the pieces of the puzzle together. And so, seeing how difficult that was and how much it meant to have your one or two people that said, I love this. I think it's going to kill it. We're in. Let's go. Right. And what that meant to me as a founder, we wanted to do that. We wanted to do that for other people that were doing cool stuff. And so we sort of started with like our buddy Bo is big into crypto and Eric's big with like sort of deep tech stuff, and I've got my consumer network and people doing cool stuff over here, and we've sort of settled down into we are primarily deep tech, like cool moonshot swings for the fences, and then a little bit of everything else, whatever else we think is cool as it comes up. And so it's fun stuff. It's our lens is like, do we believe this can 100x in the next, you know, in a decade or two? If we do, it's a shot worth taking if we actually think the founder can do it. And we all have like good nerdy friends that like can do the math, and like they're in these worlds. They, you know, the buddy that works at the nuclear lab and the other buddy at MIT IP stuff. And you're like, is this real? Should this exist? If somebody built this, can it actually do what they're saying it can do? And if it can, like, we like it. Let's try it and see if we can get it going. And then we try and help them pull the round together and go. And so none of us want to quit our day jobs. We don't want to do this full time, but we end up doing about four-ish investments a quarter. And it's great. It's a blast. And yeah, we find cool stuff, and we're good seeds for family offices that just want to do what they want into those companies. They want to sell them their energy banking services down the road, but like don't have access that we do. And so it's a great time. Honestly, it's a delicious excuse to get together and have barbecue a couple times a quarter with some of my best friends. And so it's all a scam, really. We're making money, sure. But we really just like eating barbecue together, and this is our excuse to do that.
Is it all? What stage is it? All pre-seed, kind of first all check.
All pre-seed. I mean, Series A is typically way too late for us, mainly because of that 100x, right? Like, hey, we're raising, you know, on a $50 million valuation. Well, it's way harder to get to 100x on that than it is if like we're raising at a 10, and we think, you know, like we just went into, probably the later stage one that we did one called Atom Limbs. That's like, it's a bunch of ex-Apple engineers that built a new prosthetic hand. And like, it's a good, like Apple engineer type prosthetic hand. And that hand will be on every robot, every humanoid robot. I mean, you watch Teslas or Figure Ones, you're just like, oh my gosh, these guys are light years ahead of those bozos. Not that they're bozos, they're built good stuff, but like in the hand, if I'm just looking at the hand, amateurs. And so so what Atom Limbs is doing, we're really excited about, and you know, just saw like Tyler the founder is rad and the idea is great, and you know, so I think they were closer to a $50 million valuation, but it was one of those where I'm like, dude, every robot to exist will need to use this tech. And all right, if this works, this is big enough, we'll get there. And so that was probably our most ambitious, furthest along one we did. We've done other cool ones, like a nuclear reactor that's the size of a suitcase, and the goal is to power small towns, you know? And it's like, oh yeah, and do we, the logic is like, do we believe they can actually get access to the tech? Can they get access to the people that they need? Can they do, you know, it's like all those things where our hunch is that yes, they can, and we can help them. And if they actually can, you know, every big name out there will happily put their money in because they're right. And we're saying, we think we might be able to help them solve some of this and get there. And maybe they will be. Or another one that I love, dude, is it's a company called Longshot, and it's a rail gun to shoot stuff into outer space. So I'm like, I just, you know, I need to pull it up. I'm misstating these numbers for sure, but like SpaceX got the number per kilogram down to like $8,000, and they're like, we're like 50 cents because we just rocket a 50 gallon drum into outer space, and look, we did it. And I'm like, dude, wait, can I come see this gun? They're like, yeah, you can see the gun. We built it for $800,000, and now we just need a little bit more money so we get it going. I'm like, all right, let's go. That's awesome. It's cool stuff like that.
Company that uses like, because there's one that uses like centrifugal force to like slingshot it up, or is this like full on rail gun magnet?
It's like a 4 kilometer rail gun. It's like,
love it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dude, that is the
big hill.
Yeah.
The big mountain.
Well, you don't even have to go up a mountain because, you know, the curvature of the earth, you get going straight. It'll just shoot straight out. You don't want to be in its way, though, when it launches. But, no, man.
Poor pigeons.
Like that sort of future of the world and planet Earth and stuff, like that, it's just such a fun space to stare at day in and day out. And then like some of the other stuff I've gone into recently that's like not that, the opposite, is a company called Reactive that like, they do enterprise mobile apps for e-commerce brands. And so like I used them. I was like, oh, that's great. Like you guys should turn this into a company. Absolutely. Also, I have my 100 friends that will all use you and immediately turn you into a great company. And I believe you can sell this. And like, there's a huge gap from tap cart to real apps. You should go do this. And so they're like, all right, great. Can we get 100X from, what's that?
Is this Freight? Is that a different one?
No, Freight was cool. I did Freight. I went into Freight personally. That's the returns app, I think. The Shopify returns app, right? Yeah, that's Bailey. They're cool. They were not a fit. Like I don't know if there's 100X in the return space, but I hope so. I'm an investor. I love them. But this was mobile apps, and no, it's called Reactive. And if you've ever tried to build a mobile app for like your Shopify store or something, and you've wished it could do something not generic boilerplate, you've run into this frustration of like, oh, I need this. And I think I see where like mobile apps actually can be helpful in a company's ecosystem, and people aren't doing it right now because it's hard and far reaching to put solve in there. And so I'm like, all right, this is a good investment for us. We have leverage that'll help it go, and we can help pull the fund together and all that stuff. So, or the rounding.
You're getting involved pretty early. I feel like a lot of the websites that you link to, they're still just like a splash page.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, dude, we had one. It's I forget what was. Let me look at my investing page and we'll see. Like very early. Oh, Terran Robotics. So Terran Robotics was one of our very first investments, and it was this guy that's like in a garage in Indiana. It's like, I think I figured out how to build an Adobe house using drones. And we're like, show us. And so we get the robot picks up the mud, drops it, the other robot hammers it. It's all like these drone things. And it's like, dude, if that works and you can go drop into a place, build your clay pit that's like generating the stuff, and then 1,000 drones can assemble a house in a day, like that's gonna matter. Like, let's go. Let's see if we can get this done. And he's still, I think he's just one or two guys still in the lab, just cranking away. But progress updates come all the time, and like we're kind of just paying for their mac and cheese while they work it out. But like, it's cool. We like seeing it. We like trying to solve it with them and help figure it out. It's fun, man.
It's a very different portfolio than what University Growth Fund has, for sure.
Wait, what does University Growth get into? You guys got to be doing something like this. How do you put stuff into space? What companies did you invest in?
SpaceX.
You know, ironically, one of our big anti-portfolio deals was SpaceX. We could have done SpaceX at $10 billion. We passed because literally it was 50-50 if a rocket even made it off the launch pad. And we're like, you know, our fund is really geared towards companies that are growing and have like really binary outcomes.
Well, you bet against Elon Musk. Is that what you did?
You know, so here's the thing that was funny is the student that was leading that literally like was pounding the table and yelling like into the microphone because he was in our San Diego office that we were idiots for betting against Elon Musk.
He was right. He was right.
Him? We're not betting against him. We're just not betting on him, which is, yeah, not exactly the same.
This is going to be the short that we like.
I probably would have done. You're wrong. But again, like personally, I probably would have done it. But as a fund where we've told our LPs, like our whole thing as a fund is we're investing in companies that have product market fit. They're growing. They need growth capital. And that's what we're providing. So
that sounds like it could have matched what SpaceX was doing at any point. They were growing. They needed one more rocket that could have worked. It's hard. I mean, at those bigger scales, I had a girlfriend of mine, like OpenAI just did some secondary thing. They just took in a little extra cash. And a girlfriend of mine was, you know, got offered the deal. And she's like, should I do it? It's like, I think there was like $100 billion valuation or something. And I was like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Like, do you? It seems pretty obvious that it should be a $1 trillion company. Like, can it 10x? I think it probably is on its way. But also, like, in 3 months, could all of a sudden Google come out with a thing? Probably not Google, but like, you know, somebody is going to come out with a thing that's going to just like be 10 times better. Midjourney goes into video or something instead of OpenAI getting there first. And I was like, I don't know. And fast forward 2 years, and I'm an idiot for not being so confident that OpenAI was going to be the greatest thing ever. But I feel the same way about Bitcoin, honestly. Like, I'm in Bitcoin only so that when my kids are like, you were around when they invented money and you didn't buy any? I'm like, no. I got a few. I'm not sure if it goes to zero tomorrow. I don't know. But I'm hanging on, and I'll never sell just in case 30 years from now my kids are saying, wait a minute, you own an entire Bitcoin? Just in case.
Just in case.
Yep.
It's always good to have one.
I mean, we don't know. And it's so hard to make the call in the middle. Like, now SpaceX is the most obvious winner. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Or like Stripe, you know, like, you could have got in on Stripe before they were a $60 billion. Yeah. Who knew?
It all seems obvious in retrospect, but at the time, it's never that obvious.
If only you had somebody that was pounding the table and almost forcing you to listen. Yeah, that's great, man. That's
actually
good.
Al, that brings up a good point. Have you ever made an investment where you had so much conviction and things ended up panning out the way you thought they would?
No, never.
Never? Not once?
Not yet. I mean, I've had, like, all of my best performers are the ones where I'm like, look, man, you're a buddy and I think you're smart. I'm not going to bet against you. Of course, good luck. I hope it works. And then I'm like, oh, great job. That was awesome. And the ones that I'm like, this is a clear winner. We're all geniuses. We are pre-rich. We've done it. I think I have a 0% track record on those. So the trick is, I should just never be excited and I will make more money. I think that's actually true. There's a principle in that. Don't get too excited. You'll always make more money.
Scott Fraser principle.
Who's Scott Fraser?
Well, there's several funds that have looked through their portfolio, and what they found is the best performers are the ones that are the most controversial within the firm. Like the ones where people are just yelling at each other, you know, that they shouldn't do it. And what they've come to, the conclusion they've come to, is that when it's super obvious and everybody else is trying to do it too. And either the valuation gets too high, there's too much competition or whatever, but it's like the really far out ideas that are truly disruptive and truly unique and end up generating the biggest return. I think those also end up going to zero more often than not. So there is that element of it as well.
What's an example of that? What's one that hit it? What do you
mean? Well, like, okay, so the classic example is like Airbnb, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, crazy idea. Who's gonna give money to a company where someone's gonna murder you in your sleep, right? mass run. And if you go up and down the bay, the Sandhill Road, like every single venture fund looked at that deal and passed.
Yeah.
Square, right? So
what's the last deal that you and Tom or your students were fighting over and passed on?
And passed on?
Uh-huh.
I mean, we pass on so many deals, so
that you're fighting for.
What's
that?
Like, what's this? Tom, get your head around this.
Yeah, what did you lose? What do you wish you would have been able to put money into?
Other than SpaceX?
You had no conviction for SpaceX.
You know, honestly, it's been a little tricky because the last couple of years have been a lot of deals. You know, pre-21, where I was really excited, and post-21, like, everybody's kind of struggling to a certain extent. I don't know. There aren't any deals that come to mind. I will tell you, the one deal has only happened once in the last 15 years of venture investing and probably close to 120 investments actually made. One deal where I had insane conviction and it ended up working out the way I thought it would, and that was in Structure, which makes Canvas, which is the LMS for schools.
And that'll give you so much confidence going forward, where you're like, it's another in Structure. Of course we've got to do it. I can see the future.
That was like, I don't know, like the fourth deal I ever did.
Yeah. the rest of your career is just trying to make another one of those. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. No, it's funny. It's funny in my world. I can't think of a time that like me, Bo, and Eric were like where any of us were either, even really disagreeing with each other. We're very much. We know what we're looking for, and when we find it, we all toast a big glass of lemonade and are excited to go in. Like, I think that's a benefit of being early too. Is like the expectation is not that we're right; it's that we're trying in the right lanes, right? And that we're kicking over the right stones, where, you know, if you're investing, you know, Peter's putting in $1 million in a thing, like he can't be wrong intentionally. You know, there's no like, oh, well, if not this one, the next one will get you. Like, I believe in what you're doing and we're going to get it, man. And like, not that that's what we do, but like, it matters a lot more at a million than it does at like 50K, where at 50K, I'm like, man, yeah. No, the round's coming together and we're going to like, great. We're a good indicator. We believe in this too. Let's go. And I'm
also not swinging for 100, right? X, right? Yeah. Like, guys, right? Like, be 5X done. Let's do this. Right. So,
dude, how could you not see SpaceX going to 50? How could you?
I was a believer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Hey, for what it's worth, I did do OpenAI at a lot less than 100. So I'm a believer there.
That's got to feel good, man. I feel like I was talking to a buddy of mine. He was describing his investing strategy where he's like, I look for the Mount, like he's investing in like healthcare stuff right now. And he's like, I'm looking at my Mount Rushmore of death. And it's diabetes, it's cancer, it's heart conditions, and it's like neuro brain disorder stuff. And he's like, and so I'm looking for the person or for the companies that are like going, if we solve cancer, it only extends the average lifespan by like 3 years. So I'm looking like, we got to solve all of these to have a meaningful impact. I'm looking there. And I was like, man, that actually is very, that's a great way to invest, right? That's a great way to look at stuff. Cause like he's also got his Mount Rushmore of fintech and your Mount Rushmore of consumer and stuff. And as long as you can like distill down what you're trying to do. And as I say that, I'm like, I don't have a good quippy version of that for our like future, but it's like getting off of Earth, getting, you know, energy being free, you know, like our Mount Rushmore would be something like that of what we're staring at, what we're trying to solve. And then being able to take that same level of conviction and like big thinking and put it in, you know, for me, it's consumer stuff, right? It's like, all right, I could pick the big themes that are going to matter and look for companies that I think are trying to solve that. Because this buddy of mine, he like got into Ozempic early. I'm like, how did you find, how would you even find that? But like, if you're looking for things that are hitting diabetes or hit, you know, like you're going to see this stuff. It's like, you're staring at it enough, you know what's fake and what's real, and like you can notice those things. Oh man, I really should do the thinking, do that mental lift to have that thing that I'm looking for in every space that matters to me, and then I can watch for it. It's a good plan.
Well, it sounds like you're having a ton of fun. Like, there's definitely a part of me that's jealous of like, hey, this could be like change the world. Let's give it 50K. Like, yeah. Dude, I think it's great.
I think we are having the most fun. It's funny. We Eric and I, we were hanging out at Capital Camp a couple of years ago, and we were like, which is a cool little camp that Brent Bayshore does out in Missouri, which we don't have very many capital events out here. And so when we get one, we go big. And it was a great time, but we sort of as a joke, we had the idea of rolling fun, and that would be so funny, we should do it. And we never did anything with it. And then our buddy Bo became available. Like, we all were like, all right, let's jump. And the premise, like the first meeting was just like, look, guys, we don't know if we're great at this. We don't know if we're terrible at this, but like, we all sit in our own offices and stare at the stuff alone anyway. And so if we do it together, we can actually enjoy it. We'll enjoy taking the founder meetings. We'll enjoy chasing down a lot of this stuff. And so every other week, the excuse to get breakfast or lunch, man, like it's a way better way of doing it. I think I would hate to have your job where I have to be really smart and good at this stuff for it to work at this level. It's just like, can we find cool stuff that like that more people are trying, and that makes us good. And I'm really good at that. And so is Eric and Bo. And so like we go have a blast just like finding the nerdiest, coolest stuff. And it is much different than like, I'm sorry, what? How did you call it? Due diligence? Is that what you said you were doing? It sounds terrible. is this guy real? Is he a real human? Do I know my customer? And is he really from that cool lab in Australia that's doing this thing? Okay, cool. Let's go.
Maybe we can get some.
Well,
Peter,
I mean, you have some other Stuart's out, right? Like you're looking at like, hey, can they actually pull around together?
Yeah.
The team, can we be helpful?
Yes, there's real thinking that goes into it. We're not just pissing away money, but it's like, I mean, most of that stuff is kind of anecdotal, right? It's like if we're looking at a deal, we're looking at it, and a lot of the question is like, can they pull around together? We'll help, like we'll send a few emails to our buddies, and if we can get some excitement around it, great. And that lets us be smart and helpful and all that stuff to our other investor buddies that come along with us. And then, and if they can too, like Reactive is a fine example of like, we looked at that. It was one of those, the conversation was like, dude, I've looked, like my company has looked for a solution to this. We found one of these guys that like don't even exist as a company yet. I think the company's going to put in some money. We should put in some money. We can help pull the round together. We can help solve this. And then like, we have an unfair advantage of like the connections that we can give them that are going to make their life dramatically better. It's awesome. Let's go. Right. Or like there's this battery tech that we're in called Oros. And this guy, it's two dudes out of the lab in MIT that were like, dude, we were staring at this battery tech for 10 years. Nobody was commercializing it. Essentially, what we can do is we can like 10x the density of a lithium battery. Like it's super cool. We should do this. And so they start in on it. And like Eric's got a bunch of buddies that like are in the energy space. I've got some buddies that are trying to invest in the energy space. Bo's got buddies that like know all the science stuff. And so like we get together with this guy, and it's his first time that he's had like a bunch of buddies that believe in him and are like, you know, like that stuff means something. And so like, can the round come together? A lot more likely now that we're staring at it with him, and we'll help on that. And can the tech happen? Like a lot of this stuff, the tech can happen. People just need room. They need time to cook and like keep iterating. And really the question is like, are we far enough ahead that like everyone else doesn't catch up by the time this becomes reality? And then you underestimate it, but like, are these people real people? In the age of the internet, where a lot of this stuff happens over email and very fast, it's like, we'll get on a plane and go see you. We want to visit. Let's hang out. Let's make sure that we're shaking hands and you're not pretending. And that's it. Yeah, that's fun stuff. It is, honestly, man, it's a blast. Well, like my whole life now is like, I stare at the quilt company for a little bit, and the quilt company is all like big scale. So like every decision I'm working on is like an acquisition or a big product idea or something like that, which I find deeply satisfying to work on stuff that like can, you know, it's like a good CEO is, you know, makes their value in three decisions a year. It's like, I get that kind of role where I'm like, an idea, let me try this. And they give me all the leeway I want to I don't have an official role. I'm an executive chairman of the board, but like, I wonder if I can get, you know, if there's a market in Latin America for this. How do I find that out? Let me go, like, I'll just go on these random tangents and play in these worlds and do this stuff. And then I'm doing like town building real estate stuff. And so I've got my town that we've done a bunch with. And then we've got the two towns next to us that were like very small. They're not, it's not, this isn't a flex. This is like, you know, $50,000 will buy the commercial district of this crumbling town. And then like, I have this big question of like, how much money would it cost me to like start an economy from zero and like make a town exist at some point in the next 20 years. I will incorporate a town and build around it. Like I will do this all myself because I'm just curious. That stuff is interesting to me.
And so it's kind of a city for real.
I am literally, I'm trying to fund a wastewater management facility right now. And, you know, that's next up on the docket. That's what I'm staring at. And then we're doing like Opportunity Zone fund stuff and all that kind of thing to pull money into this area and like develop it out and see if I can make it impactful. And then I get to do this future stuff. It's like, it is the greatest way to spend a week that I could ever imagine. And here we are. Here we are having a great time.
People love it.
All right. Well, to wrap it up, we're going to try a new segment.
Wait, we're wrapping it up? We've been hanging out for like 20 minutes. How long is this podcast? 30 minutes? You do a tight 30?
We've been going 40, so like 30 so far.
All right. Hold on. We got segments. Bring on the guest. Who we got?
Brute. So we are going to, you know Dear Abby, right?
Yeah, sure.
Well, we're going to do a Dear VC.
Dear VC. Somebody, you have listeners that write in questions?
Mm-hmm. We're big time.
All right, go for it. What do we got?
We're the fourth most popular VC app in Apple.
Is that real?
Venture capital.
You were nobodies. No one listened to you. And here you are, kings of the podcast world.
We're at first base. That's where we're at in my mind. Hey. Not kings. First base.
You're still talking to the bishop. That's what I'm about. Let's go.
Are you a bishop?
No, I'm just kidding.
You'd be a good bishop. All right. So the story is there were two founders. They were both co-CEOs.
Oh, yeah.
Started, okay. 50-50. Okay. So real story, but the names are hidden to protect the innocent. They're 50-50. They're co-CEOs. One person is going to handle tech, and the other person is going to handle sales and marketing, and that is how they divided up their tasks. One day, they meet a very famous founder from a company that I mentioned. Anyone who's a millennial or older would know what the company is. And the investor specifically said, "Who is the CEO?" The other founder said, "I am," and threw off this other founder because that was not their understanding.
Wait, did the tech guy say it? The tech guy didn't. He's not as confident. It's going to be the sales and marketing guy that says,
"I'm the
CEO."
The tech person said it.
Whoa, good for him. You know, first I just want to say, good for you, tech guy.
Him or her.
Yeah. Fair.
Okay. And then they had a falling out. Mm-hmm. And on the way out, they discovered through corporate espionage that this famous investor founder said that they were going to convince this founder that they were going to take good care of them and to dilute them down to zero over time. So you're in this scenario. This is your business partner.
So I understand. This famous investor went to the tech guy and said, "Hey, we can screw over your other buddy and get him out of here." Is that what happened?
I don't have all the details.
Your understanding, this is a Dear Abby. It can be our scenario. All right.
Our scenarios. I mean, I'm assuming the one person talked with the investor and said, "I'm doing all the work. This other person's doing nothing. I'm trapped."
Yeah.
Whether true or false, I'm assuming that's the other person's perspective.
Okay. So what's the question? Just what do we do with this scenario?
If you're the founder, when you have this email and this is what they said,
you're the sales and marketing founder.
Sales and marketing founder.
What do you do?
All right. Well, first, just a couple of comments on the scenario. 50-50 founder, you're just kicking the can down the road. You don't want to have the hard conversation. I mean, if you're the tech guy that's doing all the work, right? Like, have the balls up front to say, "Hey, I think I'm doing a majority of the work. I don't need to own all of it, but it needs to be a clear majority that says, here's what I'm doing. And the value of my effort, I'm valuing at X. Like, I'm going to be the product in tech, and you're going to be sales and stuff. Awesome. I'd love for you to be sales and stuff. And like, I'm going to carve out 30% for you to go and do this." Now, vice versa, if the sales and tech guy, if it's his idea and he's like, "Look, I'm going to go and take my own 100 grand and hire a guy to build this, but I would love to have you in here building it. I'd carve out 40% of the company for you to do this." Like, have those hard conversations early, because the the co-CEO, I'm doing air quotes, the co-CEO, all you're doing is saying, well, I don't want to hurt their feelings and they don't want to hurt mine. Like in the quilt company, we're actually a three-headed CEO, right? And all we were doing was nobody wanted to have the hard conversation, which in the beginning, it doesn't matter because the company's probably not going to work anyway. Well, add $100 million to it, and all of a sudden it matters a lot. And like, what are the contributions that we all have, and how are we continuing to like deliver on our commitment to this? That all matters much differently. And so like, I bet you would never talk to somebody that was a co-CEO 50-50 that did it a second time in a row the same way, right? Everybody would come out of that with a learning and say, no, I need it to be clear who the deal breaker decision is. And like, we can build around that. We can figure it out. So like that's a comment on that. So far as the sales and marketing guy getting screwed out of his stuff here, like, a couple of questions I'd have is like, if he's fully vested and he's got his equity, he or she, sales and marketing, obviously a he, the tech is obviously a she. All right. Listen, I know roles. Just kidding. but yeah, so like in a private company, I was actually talking to some buddies about this because there's a friend of mine who was describing, he's like, hey, there's four of us. We started a company. It was great. It was like me and my dad and my buddy and my, you know, his buddy and whatever. We all got together. We did it. Ran the company successfully for 10 years. And all of a sudden, dad and buddy went to retire. And the other buddy was like, he was doing something that was much smaller at scale, right? He was like the video producer guy. And this other fellow was the CEO. He or she was the CEO. Actually, they're my friends, so I can say who they were. It was a man. And so like you sort of feel stuck because if you change the equity structure, you're screwing out your own dad. And, you know, like there's a lot of nervousness around this. And the truth is, like in a private company, you don't have the ability to sell or hold shares. You don't have those rights sort of built in. And so the idea is like, well, the right move in my mind is to figure out the fair value at that time and say, great, now we're going to start buying you out, right? Like while you're in here contributing, the right move is for you to continue to hold this. But as soon as you're not an active member of this, the right move, I think, is to come to a fair agreement of what it is. And to let yourself be bought out as well, right? Like I think it's a little bit of an intellectual honesty thing. This idea that like, oh, I'm gonna go work for Airbnb for a couple of months, and then they better not try and dilute me, and they better hold my shares and respect them all the way until they IPO, so I can get the biggest return possible for this amount of time. It's like, no, man. If you worked for them for 2 years, and they come to you and say, hey, this is great. We're actually going to facilitate a sale of this now, and we're going to buy back your shares over the next 4 years or something. I think that's the right sort of, in my mind, that's the ethical conclusion to that, rather than there being any onus on the company to protect your shares. And so in this scenario, the only douchey part is this underhanded work going on that's like we'll dilute him and screw that guy and he'll never know what hit him, blah blah blah. It's like just go have the conversation and say, hey, we'd like to part ways. I don't think we need you anymore. Here's like you did a good job, you vested your equity, here's what we think a fair valuation is, and now we're going to start buying you back like X. In fact, this investor coming in could very easily be the money that bought out that other guy and solved that problem. Like
just provide, you know, new options for work going forward. And yeah, you're going to get diluted, but maybe you move on, right? I think my concern with this is, in this scenario, are the two co-founders going to want to work together anymore going forward?
Never. They will never work together again.
No.
The relationship's already over.
Do you think this founder should share the email with the other two?
I mean, it's just leverage at this point, right? Like, it's just hit.
They would not share it.
No, if it were me, because I like this stuff. I believe in confrontation, not in a mean-spirited confrontation, but like a, hey, look.
get it out. Yeah.
I know you guys are working on this thing. If you want me out, I'm fine to go. And here's what I think is a reasonable way to get me out. Or here's two or three levers that we can pull of like, I would still like to own a chunk of the company. I don't need to have the whole thing. But like, if you want me out, let's talk about it. I actually, when I got married, I had the same conversation with my wife where I was like, look, I love you. You love me. If you ever decide that you don't love me, please don't cheat on me. Just come and sit me down and say, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. And we'll solve this. But like, we don't need to be underhanded and we don't need to be sneaky. None of that needs to happen. If you're ever at a point where this isn't the thing for you, just tell me and we'll figure it out. Right. And like, I would hope that she would and trust me enough that I wouldn't like have the emotional reaction that that we could do that amicably. And same with like in a co-founder role or even in an investor role. Like if there's an investor that's coming in and he needs everybody else out or whatever it is, and it's like, all right, well, like, let's talk about it, because I'm not going to try and block your progress. I hate that there's companies that like don't exist anymore because the founders couldn't work together and also both sides refused to let the other one out, right? It's like, how dumb. How much value did you destroy by just being petty and dumb?
It's like the story's like, I mean, my advice to some people, and this is advice I have a hard time taking myself, is no matter who's right or wrong, let's just assume they're 100% right. You're stuck with the monkey with your hand with the strawberry caught in the jar, and you can't pull it out unless you let it go. And yeah. If you don't let it go, you're going to get caught.
Well, I've always been a believer that if you don't want me around, like that's enough for me to say, oh, okay, like I should probably go get another job. I'm not going to fight to stay in here when you don't want me here. That sounds like an awful place to work.
Okay, so they're both fighting. What do you do?
So like if I'm this marketing guy and clearly he's got the writing on the wall is this other investor and him are going to pair up, you're 50-50, you don't have any blockers, you don't have any recourse really. I'd go in and start trying to say, hey, if you don't need me here, like I'd play the good guy card and try to go out like as sweet a way as possible, try and get them to not hate me on the way out and see if they, you know, leave me something and give me a nice package to get out of here. And I can go, I'll go somewhere that like people want to work with me. That sounds like the better option for me. Right. That's what I would encourage him to say, because clearly the writing is there. He's nervous. He's scared. He doesn't feel safe. Get out of that environment. And an easy way to do that is like be proactive and say, hey, I don't have to, there's no blue ribbons for the guy that stuck it out the longest, even though he hated his life. Right, like yeah. go find
too short. Sure.
Way too short.
So and you would say way too you much. Would go to them and say, buy me out.
Go on.
Yeah, well, ideally I'd go to them with like two or three options, right? A good negotiating tip is have a bunch of levers. The best negotiators I've ever gone up against, they'll be like, well, what's important to you? And you sort of talk through the couple of things. And then they introduce, you have like three things that you're staring at. And they're like, and also I'm going to give you that free trip to Hawaii that you didn't ask about. And also we're going to do this other thing. And now you have like nine levers. And then they're like, okay, well, we'll turn off the trip to Hawaii. And you're like, but you just gave me that. Don't take that out. You know what I mean? And so if you're going in to negotiate, I'd have like a couple of good options of like, this would work for me. This would work for me. This would work for me. Any of these give me an outcome where, you know, the things that matter to me, maybe it's an alumni status, or maybe it's, you know, I stay in there. I always, when I read the Twitter story, I thought it was funny that, you know, Jack always, he cared about his email address. He wanted Jack at Twitter because like investors would listen to him and he could get in wherever he needed to go. That was important to him. And so like, have a couple of things that matter. If it's cash right now, you're going to take a discount on what you're able to get because like the company doesn't have the money to just pay you out. Or if it's like, you can finance it over the next 10 years and they just pay a chunk and like, you know, like values can change, all this stuff. But have a couple scenarios that work and go in and like start putting it on the whiteboard and see if you can find something that works. That's what I would say. And then the sooner you can be done with it and have something signed and like start either getting your money or moving on to your next thing, which you're going to have to do anyway, and you can take the emotion out of it, you're going to have a better life. It's going to be way better for you.
Okay.
Would you guys agree? I like this. Is that sound advice, or would you go another route?
I agree with you. I think that's the route to go. But pull the ripcord, get out, find a way to make it amicable on the on the way out, but just, you know, pour your passions into something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, John?
I'm a fighter.
You'd burn it down. You'd burn it down.
We're all down. The advice that I gave this founder was who contributed what and just where the deal's probably not going to go through with the investor would be my assumption. Take what you brought. The CTO brought the tech. Give them the tech. The other founder brought the domain. They brought the brand and the users. If you can't come to other terms, that seems like a fair way to split the baby.
Well, yeah. You cut the baby. You cut the baby.
That was my recommendation.
And then you have two halves of a dead baby.
That's right. the least delicious dessert on the menu.
Well, I think people on the show want specific answers. So that was my specific recommendation.
No, and
it's hard for founders just to walk away, just say, hey, you know, give me 10%, give me like 50K, give me 100K.
Well, I think likely. We're probably saying the same thing where like you could value what you brought and then you get to go to them and say, look, man, just, you know, happy to do this. But like my contribution looks like X, 2 years of work vesting equity in a company that, you know, we think it's probably valued at 10, call it 5. You know, like here's a fair number and here's 5 ways that I could take it or, you know, like. If I stay in, I would like to be the CEO and we need to reconsider the equity structure like X. You know, like that sort of stuff I think is much more interesting rather than like, I'll take the domain and the users, you take the tech and may us both burn in hell.
Burn in hell. I think the tricky part is, so here's maybe some critique I have for both, because you guys have like made it. Compared to the average founder, and I would, is that a fair assumption? That's what I would call.
I like to remind people that on the first date, absolutely, yeah,
on the first day, because
you have not.
Because there's a CEO I met with maybe a few years ago that had a similar problem, and their dispute was with someone who was far more wealthy, and in your mind you're just like walk, just go, but that person's point was that this is perhaps in their mind the best option they've ever had, so it's almost impossible for them to walk away. Where if you know you're, you know, investing in buying towns,
no, but like,
and
but
you've
like,
got a fund, it's
like here's
it's easy,
I don't,
right?
I don't,
it's
I don't easy. Necessarily agree with that, because I mean I don't know that my advice would have changed, you know, 10, 12 years ago either. I think it's just a mentality of like, are you in a scarcity mindset or are you in an abundance mindset? And like, if you really truly believe that that's your only like chance to make it, like maybe that's the bigger issue that you need to deal with, because man, like there are so many opportunities out there for people.
So, okay, I'm going to play bad cop, Peter. You see great opportunities every day. The average founder, typically it's them and their friends. They come up with an idea. If it gets any static attraction, they're excited.
No, it's fine to be excited, but Peter's right, right? It's that zero sum game,
for sure.
the scarcity mindset thing that these guys are battling. And if you live in that, like, if you can let yourself step into a space of like, this is a great idea, but it's a great idea and it's working because we had a good synergy and we're pulling it together. I mean, there's got to be a few, but it's not going to be very many great companies get built in where the founders all hate each other and nobody wants to do the work. And I'm not going to work anymore tonight because he's not working. You know, like that almost always leads to zero. And so like the moment and the synergy and the everything that created that company is now gone. And if you can sort of, for lack of a better term, be the grown up. I mean, ideally the, you know, in your example, John, the investor that had already made it should have a lot. He should lead with that mindset, right? Like I hate it when these, you know, you get some of these guys like punched down or you'll have these big successful guys that come and try and bully their way around in a thing and they see a company taking off and they'll take it. Like when I was a kid, man, me and a buddy, I was 14 and we made a t-shirt company, and his mom, like as soon as I started getting some sales on this t-shirt, I got like a couple sales and we did a thing, and I like, the money that we took from it, we like immediately used to go buy more shirts and stuff. And she was like, you know, she stepped in and sort of blocked it. Was like, oh, we're going to do this now. This is going to be our idea. Thanks for your help. And I was like, dude, why are you doing that? You're a grown a woman. Like, what are you doing? Like, let us try and do our thing. You know, a lot of times, yeah, they think it's going to be the next big thing and they can grab it all early. And it's like, dude, share as much as you can. It's funny, even doing businesses now, it's so much fun to be like, look, I don't need to get rich a second time. Like, we can carve this out in as generous a way as makes sense, but we still need to make sure that it's carved out in a way that like establishes clear who's in charge and stuff like that. But be generous in the off chance that you're successful. And if that all implodes, move on to the next one and go be generous again. And if you can be around people that are doing that same thing, dude, life is actually very easy. You have a bunch of people that raise their hand and say, hey, I'm not contributing as much anymore. I'm the video guy. And you can hire a video guy for $90K in a $50 million business. Like, I get that that's not a 20% position anymore, but you needed me a lot in the beginning, right? Like, I would love to work with people that sort of raise their hand and say, I think outcomes are misaligned right now because I'm just doing my thing and I'm going to keep doing my thing. I don't want to be the leader building this division. I just do this. So like, let's right size this. Man, could you imagine how great that would be to have somebody raise their hand and give some of that up because they didn't deserve it at this point? And like, maybe you made a mistake in the beginning or something like that. Go find yourself those people to work with or be that person with other people and like, man, good things. Dude, karma will come and get you. You're going to be fine. You go work with good people. You get a reputation as being fun to work with. There'll be 10 more companies on the other side of this.
Yeah. And also to that point with this investor in this scenario, right? Like, man, like people that have quote unquote made it, they can be just as much in a scarcity mindset, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hearing from this guy, right? Is like that investor who's quote unquote made it is still sitting in a scarcity mindset. So I don't think it has much to do with whether or not you've made it. Certainly, if you have quote unquote made it, it is easier to have an abundance mindset. And so no judgment from a like, oh, you're not a very good person, but like
a little judgment from me.
but whether you made it or not, you can operate with an abundance mindset, in my opinion. Yeah.
And it's funny. Knowing you, John, too, like your brain thinks in that very clear, like we, you know, oh, I'm entitled to a pound of flesh. I'll be taking that. You keep the blood. Obviously, that's your blood. We all have these different ways. Like our brain processes these things in completely different ways. And like literally you've gotten on the phone with me a couple of times and we've chatted about stuff. And I'll be like, oh, I wouldn't even think of that outcome. Like that seems... I don't know why, but like for you, you'll see your clear resolution is that way. And my clear resolution is going to be this way. And like, I think if like you and I started a company together, one of the most meaningful things that we could identify early on is how each other thinks about that stuff, right? Like if you and I were trying to separate at the end and you sort of had this expectation of like, no, I put in 48% of this thing and this is what I'm entitled to. I would need to understand that very early on and make sure that was represented in any outcome that we were thinking about, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure. This is like gold. This podcast, gold.
Hey.
So you know. I want to make a book recommendation. I know John's heard me talk about this, but...
No, I was just going to ask you, do you have any good book recommendations? What should I read, Peter?
So I just finished recently Take by Adam Grant. And he talks a lot about this, but like there's three kinds of people, right? There's givers, there's takers, there's matchers. And what he points out is like, who do you think is the most successful? The givers, the takers, the matchers in life.
I would hope it's the givers.
Who do you think is the least successful?
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, the takers should be most successful and the giver should be least successful.
So it turns out the givers are the most and the least successful. And the matchers and the...
That kind of makes the giver the taker in the end.
Yeah.
All the results.
Because over time, like givers, they either get taken advantage of, right? Or they are smart enough to avoid being taken advantage of, but at the same time, give, give, give. And then the matchers in society elevate the givers to the top because they just cannot live with themselves if they're not matching, right? Like if I receive goodness and I'm not putting goodness back out, like people that are matchers can't handle that. So anyways, I think it has a lot to do with the conversation today. So if you're a founder that's sitting in a situation like this, it might be an interesting book to read and consider, especially maybe as you're even starting a business, to Al's point, to really understand, like, where do you sit? Are you a giver? Are you a taker? Are you a matcher? What's your co-founder like? And how do you structure things at the very beginning to make sure that you're set up for success later on?
And that really is so hard, man. Like, Peter, if you and I started a quilt company tomorrow, it's like, you like quilting, I like quilting, let's go do this. Add $50 million to it, right? And like, all of a sudden, what you're good at, how good are you at scaling? How good are you at running a $50 million cut? Like, all that stuff was never considered at all when we cut the equity cake. And then as we zoom ahead, here we are. And it's funny because one of the things that I've run into is, the axiom what is it? Yes plus yes equals yes, and anything else equals no, right? So like I'm a creative guy, and if I'm working in any relationship, there ends up being like one grounded one and one that's like, I have the ideas and I'm doing the thing, and the other one has to be the grown up almost. And like in a business sense, when you're the creative or the artist, right, you have all these ideas, and every time, unless the other person is an enthusiastic yes, everything's a no. And you just keep getting shut down and shut down and shut down. It becomes this like really hard relationship to work inside of. I think it would be really smart for founders to sort of expect the relationship to go 2 to 4 years until we have new data and can sort of re-decide it. And I wish that there were more examples of like, oh, no. I was at Uber for the first 2 years, and then here's how they bought me out. Like, I wish I was working there when it went from zero or from, a million to a billion. But I was only there when they went from 0 to 6 million. So like, I got this, I had a little chunk squared away that I left in, but like, I left here, meaning that they bought me out and we solved that. And like, I went on my
way. Don't you think that kind of gets solved though, with just future equity grants?
Yeah, I think so. But like, that's not, if I'm not an investor, I don't understand that, right? Like,
that's like, fair.
I look at that and I say, oh, you were early at Uber? Good work, bro. Good work, because you got your little chit in there, and then that just held the whole way. And like, I'm not thinking about dilution, I'm not thinking about any of that. I end up seeing a lot is these guys will start out the relationship a couple years in, like nobody knows how to divorce a co-founder in an elegant way, right? It's always very hard, very dramatic, as this situation articulates. Like if it was a lot simpler of like, oh, let's get a divorce. And here's how this works. And I know I'm not going to hold all my equity because I have a value right now, and that's what we're going to talk about. And then we're going to figure out how to get me that value over the next X years, and I'm going to go on my way. Like, this is how this works. I wish that was more commonplace.
To your point, at the very beginning, it's just like, I like quilting, you like quilting, let's do this, right? Yep. You're not really thinking through all of that stuff later on. You know, what's interesting is in the fund world, you have pretty like well-defined agreements between general partners at a venture fund that are like very templated and like, very well understood. I kind of wish that you had that same, because it deals with like what happens if the partner leaves, right? And you've got a lot of structure and things built in with like vesting schedules for carry and ownership and so forth. It seems like it would be great if there was like a generally agreed upon template also there's where I'm gonna go to the YC website and I'm gonna pull off this thing
we need a co-founder prenup that says how much alimony they pay and what that honestly, man, like just that level set expectation would solve so much, I think, of like, oh great, and obviously we'll use this thing, because the freedom it gives you is a lot of times you'll find founders that just feel stuck. They're in there cranking away and they don't like, especially if you've raised money, right? Like you raise money and you're just grinding and grinding because you don't want to let them down, and you're stuck, and your quality of life goes way down. It's like, if there's a document that we sort of like had all signed ahead of time and said, hey, in the event that I want to quit this job, I don't want to be the founder anymore because it's like, it turned out not the way I was expecting. My commitment is 8 months. I'll help you find a replacement. I'll train them up. Like, we can do this together, but like, here's my duty, but also here's my window to happiness again. And like, as soon as I want to pull that eject cord, we all know what's going to happen. We should make... Peter, can the university fund please publish this document? We need this in the world. And I'll just, we start having founders sign them.
I just texted my attorney. Hey, can Venture Capital FM put this document together?
Stan.
Your attorney, ChatGPT, startup attorney?
No. No, one of my good buddies. Texted him to see what his thoughts are.
I will say, the one challenge, right, is that... And it's the same challenge with any prenup, right? It's like, well, you want to get married to somebody and you start with a prenup, you know? And it's like, well, don't you want to be married to somebody where you don't feel the need for a prenup? Just like, do you want to start a company with somebody who's like, well, just in case I decide this is not for me.
So that being said.
I want to be backing like founders where they're like, just so you know.
And having done a prenup myself, right? Because I got married well into my single career. It was the worst because you go from like, I love you so much, it's great, to being like, all right, now let's pretend we hate each other and we're never going to talk again. What do you want? What's fair? What do I want? You know, like going through all that is just brutal, especially like the weeks leading up to a wedding. Do it well before, folks. If you and I were founding a company and you came to, you know, we just have a goofy idea. It's just an idea. We're just seeing it. You come to me with this very formal document. I'm going to be like, you're a psycho. We're not even dating right now. We're just trying to start a puzzle company. And so I could see that not having the desired effect.
The only way I think it works is if it's just becomes the template, right? If you're gonna start a business, this is the one you use, right?
Gary Tan needs to do it. Just get them all to do it, Gary, and we'll follow along.
Yep, exactly.
He'll do it for all of us.
Perfect. Everyone would like to thank all of you guys for joining the Venture Capital Podcast. Here's Aldone, Rolling.Fund, Peter Harris University Growth Fund, and I'm John here from Codebase. Thank you so much. And join us for the next episode, VentureCapital.fm.
Thanks, everyone.